Welcome to the Culture and Sports Podcast, where we have discussions about how leadership and organizational culture impact organizational success, team and athlete performance, and the short and long-term mental, physical, and emotional health of athletes. The Culture and Sports Podcast is brought to you by Culture and Sports. Culture and Sports helps sports organizations, teams, coaches, support and front office staff, and athletes understand the importance of leadership and organizational culture and its direct impact to success.
Please join Robert Boland and Dr. Jeremy Piasecki in this season of the Culture and Sports Podcast.
Welcome back to the Culture and Sports Podcast. I'd like to introduce you to an incredible guest, Micah Grenewitz. She's a student at the University of Alabama, and she's a medically retired volleyball player. How you doing, Micah?
Yeah, okay, great. It froze, but I was assuming I could just go ahead and intro myself. So, not sure what you said about me, but you've probably covered it all. I played volleyball at the University of Alabama, had to medically retire right before my junior season, but right now I intern with Athlete Enhancement, still staying involved in athletics, having a good time.
And you were recently on the on Culture and Sports' annual Leadership Summit. And thank you for joining us with that. Now, why was that topic and that summit important to you?
Yeah, I was so happy to be invited on that podcast, happy to come back. And that's such an important topic to me because I feel like college sports has been the same since my generation has entered the space. And now I think it is really transforming, but it's not a slow transformation. I think it's happening really fast, and it seriously is every week or every month there's new info, new rules, new everything. So I think it's really important for us all to stay educated. And then even though I was there in the athlete space, I was talking a lot about the parent role, and to me that's very important because I was raised by a single father who knew just as much about women's volleyball as I did as a 12-year-old. So it's like he definitely played a really large role in getting me to where I am right now, not only making the right choices, but more importantly, not making the wrong ones. And I think it all happens so fast with recruiting and then these 4 years, and your parent really needs to be educated, and that's what's going to kind of take you further than everyone else, I feel.
Can you expand on that a little bit more? Because, you know, obviously you're an athlete, medically retired athlete now, but, you know, you were learning kind of on the fly along with your father, but, you mentioned that in the summit and now again. Can you kind of talk a little bit more about why the learning curve was so steep for both of you?
Yeah. Well, as long as I could remember, up until a point, college coaches had full reign of players. And, well, that's like, okay, great, awesome. I was in eighth grade, and when college coaches have full reign, including over eighth graders, a lot of serious conversations come up. And I kind of found myself just regurgitating what I thought those coaches wanted me to say or what I thought they wanted me to hear. And it took a parent to really step in and kind of have those conversations with me one-on-one as to, well, who are you, Micah? Even though you're in eighth grade, it's kind of like, wait, like, who am I? And I had to start thinking about things like my major, the location of the school, the staff, things that were really important to me as a player. And I was so young. And so that's when, you know, your parent really needs to step in and kind of tell you how it's going to be when you're 18, 19, 20, and those really important things like finances that you don't really know anything about that you have to start thinking about at an early age. So we went from having all the coaches on us to no coach contact until I was a junior or senior. And that's when things got kind of tricky, because once you go that whole period of no contact with coaches, and then you hit that mark in your high school career, they start throwing everything at you because you've gone that whole extent. So that's when coaches really start kind of, you know, trying to sell you on their program. And when you're trying to sell someone, you don't necessarily tell them how it is raw and straight up. So that's when you kind of need, like, you've got the coaches being the angels, actually, and then your parent on the shoulder being the devil, my dad kind of giving me the reality check. And I still kind of wanted to just kind of only listen to what they had to say. So that's when I think having a strong parental role comes in even more handy with NIL. Because, again, we've got college students that are 17, 18 years old getting, you know, a lot of different NIL endorsements, and we don't really know how to handle that.
No, actually recruited kind of under different pretenses than like college athletes that are coming in today. So you've seen this develop firsthand. Do you think that the way NIL is and it's developing now, it's actually more difficult for the athlete now than it was even 3 years ago or 2 years ago?
Well, COVID actually had a bigger impact on my recruiting than NIL. So it was kind of like, okay, rule change, bam, COVID, bam, NIL, bam. And I just had like all three of those big changes. But now, there's honestly two sides to whether NIL could make the recruiting process easier or more difficult, because I think NIL is making a more even space within college athletics, where it's like, before it was, okay, am I going to play? Are we going to win games? Am I going to like it there? But now it's, okay, you have opportunity to potentially pay me. So it's kind of really making it about what you want as a player. And I think it's enhancing the college experience, because you don't have to just chase athletics. You can chase other things or go places where they might put you in better conditions after college. And that becomes a factor. Or, you know, Alabama has they have a great NIL center here. And it comes down to, okay, I'm getting good NIL from multiple schools maybe, but who's going to help me handle it the best? Who's going to help me manage it? You know what I'm saying? Who's really going to be there for me? And I will brag on Alabama all day, even though originally I was like anti-Bama, but I would brag on them all day. I think they handle NIL like no one else. So
now a lot of the discussion at the summit and throughout this season of the Culture and Sports Podcast, there's been a lot of talk about revenue generating sports and non-revenue generating sports.
Yes.
No one has ever said women's volleyball or men's volleyball is a revenue generating sport. Mm-hmm. Now, you seem excited about Alabama and their support of students. Where do you see non-revenue generating sports like women's volleyball, or supposedly they're not revenue generating sports? Where do you see like an athlete like you developing in the future, you know, as they're coming into college? Like, do you think that NIL is there and it can actually work for athletes in sports that are not watched as much? Where do you think that athlete lands?
Yeah, well, I think there are a lot of volleyball programs on the rise that are, if they're not already, will be revenue generating in a couple of years, like Texas volleyball, Nebraska volleyball. Nebraska sold out their football stadium to play a game of volleyball outside, never before been done. And I really love the idea of NIL within non-revenue generating sports, because to me that is true NIL. Because when we think about the sports that don't generate revenue, I'm thinking of the individual sports. And I'm thinking of, you know, like track, golf, swim, dive, volleyball in this case, where it really is all about them. So if they are getting those NIL endorsements, it's like kind of like, holy crap, like that truly is based off your talent, your character, your image and likeness. And I think that is very impressive compared to some of the NIL that is thrown out just because you have the name of a large organization, of a team on your back. You're representing the team more than anything. And then sports like volleyball, men's and women's, although they're not revenue generating and they're not individual, I think it is such a personal and intimate sport like no other, similar to basketball in a sense, where you really are seeing the players' faces, their reactions, how they conduct themselves. And it's much more intimate, where you can get to know them. And that is true NIL, in my opinion.
No, that's very exciting. You were recruited, you came on as an athlete, and then just like the year or two behind you, some of the recruiting incentives were a little bit different. Did that change the dynamics at all within your team? Are a lot of people blowing it out of proportion that, oh, certain athletes are offered certain things that are not the same as other athletes on the same team?
Well, that notion that athletes are getting more than their peers, I would definitely say you might want to talk to a football player about that. But for me personally, I have loved the concept of NIL specifically within Alabama athletics because my teammates personally that I see growing the most in NIL, I'll be frank, they are not the starting player. They're not the one with the superstar stats, but they have the most beautiful personality. I could listen to them talk all day. They have really used their time wisely at Alabama to honestly, wait, I have influencers and I have content creators on my team, and they bust their butt in the classroom, bust their butt on the court, and they are still carving out time to have that space to represent themselves. And I think that's really admirable. And a lot of it, a lot of the girls that I'm close with that make that money off of NIL, I think it shows how deep we are as people and not just athletes. Because I have a very good friend, her content, although it is geared towards being an athlete and the athlete mindset and mentality, a lot of it is geared towards her faith and being a Christian. And so it's like, okay, we're opening up the world for, okay, athlete influencers. But it's like, okay, like Christian athlete influencers. Okay, like a Christian influencer. And I think there's just so many layers being built that are showing that, yeah, a lot of our NIL and our identity is within athletics, but there is just so much more. And I think being able to capitalize off that, especially at a place like Alabama, where they have, our podcast NIL Center, where you can go in and record yourself, go in, make your content, it's really allowing athletes to discover themselves. Because I think a lot of the time when you see athletes fail, you see athletes not living up to what they could have been, you see them come out of college and they're lost. I think it's because they don't know who they are. They don't have their identity. And a space like NIL, your name, image, and likeness, those are things that you have to develop and figure out once you are in this space. So I think really just exploring your identity is great. And I really just enforce that for all athletes, whether they make money off of it or not. I think the money is just, and the publicity is just a perk of it. But at the end of the day, express yourself and be yourself.
So, do you think that's a little more focused on brand building, like individual brand building, as opposed to selling like a product, like whether it's the university or selling yourself as an, like portraying yourself as an athlete? It's more of building your own brand.
I think it depends who you are because, again, I have friends where their NIL and their publicity, it comes purely based off of, what their brand is, what they want to represent, or, it's themselves and they are an influencer. Like, I'm selling Micah Grenowitz, but I do see some athletes where they are doing, honestly, very good PR work for the university, and their content is very geared towards, I'm going to show you the Alabama athlete lifestyle, and this is what I'm going to show you. And it's all the amazing, wonderful things that come with being a Bama athlete. And they're, instead of necessarily selling products, sometimes they do sell products, but I really think NIL as a whole is selling the school, and it is doing good PR for the school.
During your time as an athlete and now in your new role, do you see any disparity of not excitement but just interest in NIL from athletes? Like if obviously ones who are outgoing and don't mind being recorded or sharing their story, those athletes seem like they would fit well into it. But then you have athletes who, just like to be on their own and they're just focused on maybe the love of the sport. They're just focused on studies or whatever the case may be. They just don't want to be out there. Like, is there a disparity, not necessarily in playing time, because you've already explained that, but more of just they may not get as much out of the NIL experience as possible?
Yeah, I definitely think it's all about what you put into it because I have seen people really dedicate their time to their NIL career, again, playing time or not, and it has worked out for them. And I've seen people that say, I don't want any part of that. I don't want to have to make content. That's another layer to my student athlete job. It's going to take a lot of time. It's not for me. And they stay away from it. But I've also seen if you're that good, all it can take is just, a picture with your product, smile post. That's all. And then bam, you have NIL, you have your money. So I think it really is just if you really want to dive into the public figure influencer side of it, where you are consistently posting, consistently marketing and branding. Because a lot of the, I want to say this is personal opinion, but honestly, it's a fact. A lot of the male athletes, they don't have to go through the content creation. They don't have to film everything, chop it up, edit it, have all of this magnificent branding surrounding their image. They can just get the deal simply because of, you know, their status within that program. And it's just that simple: pose, picture, here's my money. Whereas I think a lot of girls, we really do have to market ourselves, I feel. And we do really have to put in the work of content creation to build that brand. It doesn't just come with the name, unfortunately.
So just because you're a scholarship athlete at a high level school in a great program doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to get NIL opportunities. Like, you may if you're in maybe like the QB at Bama, right? Like, you're probably going to get like some deals. But if you hustle and you're out there focused on that, NIL could be very lucrative. Even if you're a bench player in whatever sport it may be, or you're in a sport that a lot of people don't watch, but you could still go out there and do decently for yourself, correct?
Yeah, and there's also, I think if you, it's also the idea of what are we going to categorize as NIL? Because NIL could mean free product. And it's like, okay, this person's getting NIL, but at the end of the day, it's product. This person, their NIL might be a check. They might be getting a check with commas. Or this person. And it really, I think a big thing that we have to hone in on is the value, or what are we being compensated for exactly? Because some people, you know, your NIL deal might be one post and you're getting commas. Some person, they might have to chop up and edit three videos just for some product. And I've been on both sides of that, where one post equals a check, or all of this work equals just some product when I was first starting out. So it really is about building yourself up. And I honestly, that's something that I think people don't really see and don't pay attention to. They see people posting NIL, and depending on who they are, I think their brain automatically either creates a number of what they think they deserve, what they think they're getting, versus what they actually are getting. Where a lot of the times, for the non-revenue sports, it's not even money, it's products.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to transition this discussion a little bit about more about universities and colleges potentially having their athletes as employees. Who knows if that's going to be compensated employees or what that's going to look like, but what are your feelings overall about possibly athletes possibly being classified as employees, and does that change what an athlete, a collegiate athlete, does every day?
Yes, I think that phrase, having athletes as employees, is very interesting, because I think depending on who you ask, you will get a different response. If you ask different people, like, are you employed at the university? If you ask me personally, Mike, are you an employee of the University of Alabama? I would say yes, because I'm a full scholarship athlete that receives a stipend, and I consider that stipend my paycheck. However, if you ask a non-scholarship athlete if they are employees of the university, if I were in their position, I would say no, because you don't get a stipend. I'm not getting a paycheck from the university. So I think the opportunity, in my opinion, it's already in place, because like I said, I really do feel like we are employees of this university. But if that opportunity were to be spread throughout non-scholarship athletes, I just think there's a lot of logistics that we have to think about, because, again, I just think the scholarship versus non-scholarship lifestyle is a lot more different than people think. And I'm curious to see if that would expand to them or not.
So do you think that would add to disparity, like on the field or court or in the pool, whatever the case would be, between athletes who are scholarship and potentially employees and those who are non-scholarship? I mean,
I think it will.
And how would that even work? Sorry, go ahead.
I think it will. And I mean, I think it should, to be honest, because as someone that has transitioned from full-time student athlete to where I am right now, I'll say it. I look at my peers that are walk-ons that have no scholarship, and I'm like, how and why are you doing this? Because I think it's a lot harder than what people make it out to be. And I'll be honest, I couldn't do it if I wasn't getting my school paid for. I couldn't do it if I wasn't getting my stipend. Those are my incentives. And as much as people say you should be doing it because you love it, it's a job. It is a job. It's a job. No matter how much you do love it, that consistent schedule of work and exertion takes a toll where it's like, I need incentive. I do.
Well,
So.
and you're required to be at certain locations at certain times. Like, you don't have control
You
over
have
your
control over
schedule,
anything.
right?
And with that, as well as with schooling, because, back when I was an athlete, some people in my class, I'm like, hey, like, you weren't in class, like, where were you? And they're like, oh, I had to take a mental health day. And it's like, oh, how many times I wish I could have taken a mental health day as an athlete. So just so many things like that, where you are obligated to be at your athletic events, but you're also obligated to your student events. And then, like, it's just, yeah, there isn't really much control over anything. And if I am not being compensated for that, it's like, then why am I doing it? And walk-ons and non-scholarship athletes are essential to college sports. People, a lot of people act like sometimes they just take up spots, they just fill jerseys, but no, they are an essential part. And I do think there should be more compensation.
And do you think that might change if athletes are classified as employees? Do you think that even walk-ons would be considered employees and their situation would change? That when you're talking about the haves and the have-nots, do you think that colleges and universities might actually shy away from any walk-ons or non-scholarship players and only have scholarship players?
Well, I think shying away from non-scholarship athletes, I cannot speak for every sport on how that would affect them, because volleyball, you're either scholarship or you're not. And if we take away people that aren't on scholarship, that takes away an entire position in volleyball, because there are certain positions in volleyball where scholarship is incredibly rare. So like that volleyball world will crumble without walk-ons. And I mean, we could go back and forth on, oh, I believe that non-scholarship athletes should have their compensation. How much? Don't ask me. Not sure. That's a whole can of worms that we could get into. But I do think that they deserve it, and I think it will come, because I mean, my non-scholarship peers, they're doing the exact same work that I am, if not more, because they need to find a way to get everything paid for. And that's what it is.
No, that's really interesting. Do you think that at some point in the future, if employee or if athletes are classified as employees, do you think that some sports programs within major universities will be cut? Not necessarily at Alabama, but maybe, some other universities. Or do you think that schools that have way less income when it comes to sports athletics, do you think that they will just shut down sports programs completely? Or do you think that with revenue generation the way it's going, do you think that schools and, colleges and universities will end up having more athletes, more programs? Like, where do you see it going?
I see. Honestly, I could see them cutting the walk-ons for sure. Because again, I'll speak for volleyball on this. When we do have our walk-ons and they are that one position, we technically really need one or two girls to really step up and perform consistently every single game. Not the whole group. We need our one or two. So I really don't see like why the university would keep that slot open if they're not going to compensate them. And again, if it were me personally, I don't see why I would take that spot if I'm not being compensated fairly. And as for larger sports like maybe men's football, where the walk-on, there are a lot of walk-ons on men's football, but I don't see how essential they are to the team's success compared to volleyball. Because volleyball are walk-ons, again, like I said, they're essential, but those other sports where they're high revenue, where people want to be in that position so badly and there's so much to pull from, I don't see why they would keep it.
Okay. Now, going back to eighth grade, Micah. If
Let's
everything
talk about
was,
it. Let's talk about it. It's my favorite era. Yeah.
if everything were, to be the same in the sense of, you were still playing volleyball and all those things, and now the rules for NIL and the rules for just, so many different things in colleges, universities are ever changing, and it's really uncertain. Would your goal for playing at college be different, or would it still be the same, or would you actually be more excited to try and
Okay.
go get a scholarship? Where would you go as eighth grade Micah?
Yeah, okay. So if I were eighth grade Micah and NIL were in place, I really think that my priorities when choosing schools would stay the exact same. And I honestly, it would have drew me closer to Alabama. When I was in eighth grade, Alabama was, I think, the first Power Five school to give me a scholarship offer in eighth grade. And I'm from Arizona. I'm a West Coaster for life. I was like, Pac-12 is where I want to be. Pac-12 doesn't exist anymore, but at the time, I was like, I am playing in the Pac-12, never going to the SEC. And those are all the schools that wanted me. But when I was like organizing like the schools that offered me and what they had to give, one thing that stood out about Alabama to me was like everyone that has graduated from Alabama, has gone through the system, they leave and they are Roll Tide for life, Alabama. We love it. They love that school more than anything. And I'm just like, why? So I was so drawn to Alabama because of like, I call it the Roll Tide factor, right? That's literally just what I called it. And now I guess like I would call the Roll Tide factor connections. You know, like I was just like, you go to Alabama, you make all these amazing connections. And I think they've just taken all of those connections and put it to the NIL center. You know what I mean? So I think we have the best NIL center, the best connections out of any school. So I would stay at Alabama. And I mean, at the same time, in eighth grade, I was considering schools like USC, Pepperdine, just because Duke, just because, you know, like you see it and you have connections there. So I would also tell eighth grade me, gosh, I honestly don't know if I would tell her to focus on volleyball more or focus on branding herself. Because back in my day, when I was, you know, in high school, middle school, whatever, I will say that me and my friends were some of the first people kind of in our area to really be like out. Volleyball players. You know, I think volleyball, where I was from, and at the time, it kind of had a reputation of being like a passive sport. Like, you get the point, like, high fives, yeah. And it's like me and my friends, we were going at it. We were celebrating. We're jumping. We're celebrating like we're playing basketball for Duke. We're celebrating like we're the men. Like, we're going into it. And we had people from, like basketball clubs, how they make basketball mixtapes, they film it, edit it all cool. They were doing that of us. For volleyball, and that account had this had a, so many followers in Arizona. I'll never forget it. They'd post basketball highlight tapes for the first time. They were posting volleyball highlight tapes because we're acting like fools because we're having fun. And so at the time, that was so like it was a little bit new, and we'd post it, and everyone's like, "Oh my God, this is kind of cool. Like this is kind of fun. Like oh my gosh!" But now, with NIL being a thing, you look back at girls who are in eighth grade who are in high school right now. And they've added that layer of NIL to their own life before they've even gotten to college. And I think it's becoming a larger priority now for people to start marketing themselves early. Because once you get to college, the more NIL success you have, unless you really just pop off in college, what you have in high school, it will help you. It really will. So again, I go back and forth between. If I would tell her to, you know, keep putting those type of things out there or just lock in on the game, because I also am that person now where a lot of the stuff that would have gotten me a lot of attention and NIL value views, I was too afraid to post it. I was like, is this weird? Is this too like, is this too much for sport? I would just be, you know, messing around making TikToks, and it's like, man, if I would have just posted that, I would have been the first one. And then that maybe that would have doubled my NIL value. Like, no. So just stuff like that. It started off for me and my friend as just us joking around and people happen to film it. But now people are definitely making it a point to play exaggerated. That's what I have noticed. And sometimes when people make it a point to play exaggerated and out there, you're compromising your actual volleyball skills and technique, is what I've personally noticed with younger girls. So I'm curious to see how that will play out.
Now, do you feel that if you would have been working for 5 or 6 years before you were a collegiate athlete, but you were working on brand building and, you know, deals in general, do you think that it would have been really invasive for you as such a young person, like a preteen or a teenager, that all of a sudden so many more people would have been involved in your life, and all you're really trying to do is you're trying to get to, you know, a college or university on a full ride, make all this NIL money, like you as an individual, as a human being, like, do you think that would have been a little bit difficult, or would you have been fine with that?
You saying that just made me realize how young I am, because I came to college when I was 17, 18, and I was like doing them. I was like 13, like I would have been 13, like at that time. So I really do think that, you know what? I think it's really crazy because people look at me now and, you know, we talk about NIL, talk about podcasts, and they're all like, Micah, like, I'm sure that you're great on podcasts. And I'm like, yeah, I love to chat. It's like, I'm sure you've gotten so much NIL. Like, you're so like expressive, whatever. And I'm like, yeah, I have. I have not, like, this isn't me. Alabama has morphed me into this, because pre-Alabama, I was nothing like I am now, if I'm being totally honest. Like, the way that I had to live, the way I grew up, I was very quiet, very quiet, very, but volleyball was my space. Volleyball was my thing. So that was the only time where I really would be like loud and out there like that on the court. However, with that being said, if I rewind back and I ask myself, how would I handle it? I do not think I would be comfortable or in a position to publicize myself and brand myself at that age. One, because, you know, like I said, I'm quiet and I'm already feeling judged. You know, I'm already feeling judged in that environment. So I wouldn't want to push that out there, because for the times that was very different, you know. And I don't think it's something that young girls, until they start to reach that like 17, 18 year old mark, they shouldn't be focused on that, because a lot of content is scripted, you know what I'm saying? A lot of it is like, people want to be mic'd up. People are starting to mic themselves up in their high school practices, which I think is crazy, because it's like, then you're not focused on what's actually going on. You're thinking of what to say to get a funny soundbite, you know? And so I just don't like, for that level, I don't like that they're thinking about that. Because once you reach the college level, they're micing me up, they're handling that, they're doing the content for me. I'm just thinking play, play, play. Whereas, you know, once you start doing it too young and you have to handle all the production, all the entertainment aspects by yourself, I think you're compromising authenticity for sure. And also, when you're young like that, I think you're subconsciously kind of performing to an extent. And you're thinking, okay, how do I look? How do I sound? What's going on? You know, you have a mic on you. And I think when you start thinking about that before you get to the age of college, that could potentially add to another layer of burnout, to be honest. I've known many volleyball players that have gotten burnt out, where they quit after their first year in college. And I just think, you know, once we start putting that pressure of, okay, now we have to entertain, now we have to make content, now we have to create on top of already being an athlete, that could potentially lead to more burnout. And I have experienced that firsthand, trust me. So that's just, it's another thing that I don't think, they might think they're ready for it, but once they know what it's like to really go full influencer, full mode like that, I think it might be more than what some young people could handle.
And you brought up some very interesting points in everything you were just talking about. So I guess I have to ask this question. In today's recruiting, or tomorrow's recruiting, if you were to be quiet Micah like you were in eighth grade, or is it like 12, 13 year old, and through high school?
17, last year, 17.
Yeah. Do you think that you would have, you would be recruited by like coaches from Alabama and top tier D1 schools, or do you think because you wouldn't be putting yourself out there, do you think that the opportunities would be less?
Well, I think at the end of the day, NIL is to benefit athletes and give the school good publicity. But I think the people in charge of athletics, the recruiters, the coaches, at the end of the day, they're recruiting athletes, dogs. They do not care about your influencing, do not care about your TikTok, whatever. And even though I have even when I was being recruited, they could see that I was, like a nice girl off the court, whatever. And I know a lot of people, they like to mix, personal with their sport. I was not like that. I was like, y'all will see how I am as a person. You can trust that I'm a great person, good morals, good head on my shoulders, whatever. But I am here for volleyball, and all you need to know is that I'm a dog, and I'm gonna work my butt off all the time. And you need to know this about me on the volleyball court, and these are my good qualities as a volleyball player. And I didn't want them to see the other stuff. So I feel like coaches are going to disregard all of the media stuff. And I think people within athletics should recognize that an athlete's NIL content is hopefully very separate from their sport. Because honestly, well, depending on your NIL content, a lot of it is someone doing a character, Like a lot of people that kind of creates more video-based things, I will say. It's their character. But once they are in the gym, in a practice setting, in a game time setting, that should be not even a factor. Because like I said, if you are too into it, you're going to start to be thinking, what do I look like while this person's taking my photo? I'm mic'd up. I hope I like say the right thing, and it becomes inauthentic, and you kind of start to lose sight of the goal.
Now, do you think that in this day, parents, aside from athletes wanting to do this, do you think that parents may be afraid that, their kid is going to miss out and, oh, you need to start doing like a lot of, content creation and you need to focus on this in order to be recognized, or to make money? Do you think that some athletes are going to be pressured by people close within their support sphere, where maybe they shouldn't be?
Okay, some of it cut out, but I think I got the question. I do think the branding is starting early. The branding is starting so early. And I can't even speak for how it's like on the girl side versus the guy side, but I've seen more YouTube channels, personal logos, clothing lines, business inquiry emails in bios of young athletes who aren't even committed yet than I have ever. And I think a lot of it is, I think the parents play a large factor because, your parent doesn't want you, to get ahead of yourself, mess things up for yourself. It's a whole realm that you have to navigate that they, have more experience in, finances, stuff like that. But also, there is, I don't, I'm trying to keep a little anonymous, but I'll say in high revenue generating male sports, there is a lot of parents, kind of latching on to the kid and being there for the ride in a negative way, which it can kind of start in like a parent manager role, And sometimes that's good. Sometimes it's like, okay, you want your parent to handle that while you handle what's on the court or the field. But other times, it does morph into, that athlete that's still in high school whose parent wants to, get them all of this stuff so that by the time they go to college, their NIL career is like set. But I mean, I don't necessarily think that's a negative because, as I said in the other sports panel, I think sports are a proper reflection of American society. And we're in the age of influencers, and we have literal influencers on the court, on the field. And influencers need management at the end of the day. So maybe it's not such a bad thing for it to be someone in-house,
Do you
I
think
don't know. I
that
think it could go either way.
in most cases, in-house, family parents, are continue to be like completely safe? Or do you think that sometimes with parents concerned that their child might miss out, that sometimes they take bigger risks, that they wouldn't have even taken 2 or 3 years ago?
When I think of any risks that might be taken with an NIL involving a parent that could affect a child, my mind first goes to a parent's role in the recruiting process. Because to me, a parent's role in the recruiting process at the root of it should be a parent assisting the child and like helping to find their second home, right? Like a place that's safe, where you know your child will be taken care of, respected, safe, everything is good, where you can trust them with your child. But now college athletics, I think it's becoming such an even playing field, and I think we're seeing that in like the outcomes of sporting games. It's such an even playing field because we have things like NIL, where you don't have to go to the same top two, top three sports schools that win all the time. And I think that could be a good thing and a bad thing, because we have money influencing what you prioritize, I guess. You know what I'm saying? Like, if your parent prioritizes money over education, maybe it might not be a great thing in the recruiting process to have your parent right there, because they might like this school because they're offering more, even though this school really has the major you want. So I just think it's another, like, I had a spreadsheet when I was getting recruited of like all the things that I cared about, all the little categories. And if I were getting recruited, I would make a new tab that said NIL factor. I would, because that's what you have to do now.
Well, outside of NIL on your spreadsheet, what were your categories?
You just opened up the can of worms to talk about my recruiting journey, because it was a hectic one.
That's
So, like,
okay.
oh, it's one of my favorite things to talk about. So, I got recruited during COVID, and my whole thing, why I was so excited for the official visit date to roll around, is because my family, we were not in a position to pay for my own visits. A lot of my friends during the time of recruiting, they saw other girls committing to schools without even taking visits, because COVID, you can't fly people out, can't have them on campus. And so they're like, oh my gosh, like all these girls are committing, I'm gonna hold my own visit. So I had all of my peers taking road trips, flying out, visiting schools by themselves, and I'm just thinking, like, I can't afford that, like, what? So I narrowed down my top five schools, all ones that had the best academics. I wanted to play right away. That was important to me. Had to be a Power Five school, good location, because again, I told you I never wanted to go to the South, but the SEC loved me. So I was like, oh, like location, I was either gonna, stay out the West or go really far. Stuff like that. People were going back and forth if I should pick based off of, if I like the team, the coaching staff, campus, all those factors. And so I'm like, okay, I'm gonna have my own little road trip. I'm gonna kind of hit the South, go to these schools. My first trip I went on was Ole Miss. Absolutely hated it. Came up to Alabama, and after Alabama, I had four visits lined up, but there were some really strange events that day, where like God was like slapping me in the face, being like, wake up, Alabama, Alabama's the answer. And I was just like, no, until one day I was like, yeah, you're right, Alabama is the answer. So I ended up verbally committing over the phone. No, I canceled all my other visits. Coaches were pissed, but I was like, I committed, sorry. I didn't even plan on it. But yeah, I ended up committing here after driving here myself, and then the rest is history. I ended up getting a new coach the week that I was supposed to be on campus. Her first time on campus was also my first time on campus. So that's how that went. But I think COVID put a bigger wrench in my recruiting than any other rule change, NIL event or whatever. But I still do think Alabama, God, I could not imagine myself anywhere else. Anywhere else, even in the role that I am now as medically retired. And I do think NIL, or I think Alabama will be like the historical hub for NIL or something, just because I think we're the first school, to my knowledge, to get like the Learfield Center and all that put in place.
No, that's a great story. Thank you for sharing that. Before we go, I wanted to thank you so much, not only for being on our annual leadership summit and being on this podcast, but also just for your openness and your honesty. I think that a lot of people, when they come on to any show or speak, you know, they sometimes like to put aside the harder things, whether it's, you know, things to discuss or harder parts of their own life. And you've been very open and authentic. And so, you know, I definitely appreciate that. I know our listeners and viewers will. So thank you for that. But before any episode ends with Culture and Sports Podcast, we ask the guest this question. If there's anything that you could tell our viewers or listeners, athletes, parents, coaches, athletic directors, presidents of universities, conferences, NCAA, or even now all of these adjacent places like NIL collectives or conglomerates, what would it be?
You know what? That's a broad audience, so I'm going to end it with a broad statement. I think we are in the age of the athlete's voice. I think athletes are starting to have a bigger platform where we aren't just little characters on your television. And I think you're going to find that the people that you watch on a daily basis, the people that you criticize, people that you cheer for, the people you bet on, we are some of the most deep characters you will meet. And I think the student athlete experience puts you to the test, absolutely. And I think when you're put to the test, that's when your character grows. And I think with name, image, and likeness, you're going to see that character come to light. And I think it's going to be in some beautiful ways, as well as some ways that bring controversy. But again, remember, student athletes are deep human beings with depth, interest, and characteristics that go completely outside the realm of sports. So I would just say, before any criticism comes, just listen. Just listen to your athletes, because we have a lot to say. That's all.
And that's a wrap for this week's episode of the Culture and Sports Podcast. We hope that this episode has started an internal dialogue, or even one with your team, about the importance of leadership and organizational culture. If you'd like to learn more about Culture and Sports, the Culture and Sports Podcast, or other programs, go to cultureandsports.com, where there is a wealth of resources, articles, research, podcasts, video shows, webinars, and courses. And don't forget to connect with us on social media, on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, and LinkedIn at Culture and Sports, and on Twitter at Culture and Sport. Thank you for tuning in to the Culture and Sports Podcast.